Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon. Bit nervous about following on from James. He's so erudite and detailed, but I'll do my best. I have got slides with me, but I always treat slides a bit like life. You know, you say the best parts of life happen in between all the plans you've made, or the most interesting bits. So possibly the most interesting bits will be the bits that are not on the slides and the conversations in between. I'm not going to go into detail in this. You've had a whole morning and early afternoon about this. The landscape is going to change. I'm from further education. I've been 30 years in the further education sector, very involved in HE as well, in mixed economy colleges as vice principal higher education. I sit on the university leadership board. So I'm kind of an FE person who also is involved in HE. What is affecting you now is a bit like we've had for the last 10 years, perhaps more so. So what I'm going to do is talk from an FE perspective, because I wouldn't deign to kind of go into the detail that you live with every day. So it's about this dynamic, responsive higher education system, new entrants, open market, competition. We've been threatened with that since time began. FE colleges are still there. We've had to change. We've had to adapt. But fundamentally, I think the question is, how deep do we have to change to make sure universities and FE, HE and FE, responds to the new challenges, and students are absolutely at the heart of that system. We talk about it all the time, but how real is it? I think there are three key questions. How will the HE system change and respond? How will government intervene or not? I mean, this is very timely with the latest ministerial statement out, which we've been examining. But I think most importantly, what will new audiences want and how will they learn? Okay. So let me just say a few comments from an FE perspective. Without growth in HE, we think there's unlikely to be much scope for new audiences, and the changes will be incremental, not dramatic. Now, I'm not saying it will be like that, but I think there needs to be a kind of difference in the shape and the form and the flexibility. FE is already adept at reaching audiences which are non-traditional, and we're totally clear that universities will get cleverer and more robust and more proactive in that. But what we hope is we want to carry on in partnership with universities working in this niche work. We are not trying to be cheap universities. We'd be bonkers to go down that route. We're looking for the distinctiveness in FE and how that distinctiveness can add value in an HE integrated system, which I'll talk about a bit more in a minute. We're good at preparing people from non-traditional groups for traditional HE as well as non-traditional HE. Government rhetoric is really supportive of FE at the moment, and I think you're getting bashed harder as universities, and we're kind of a bit more sexy at the moment in terms of vocational skills and funding. It's the realities of that, and we welcome that. It's the realities of that and how that pan out, I think, that, you know, we're having to look at as well. And a widening participation policy that focuses primarily on getting sort of bright young people into Oxbridge is important, but it, you know, it's much bigger than that, and the debate is much bigger than the Russell Group University. And obviously there's a big issue about foundation and teaching degree awarding powers and franchising arrangements, etc., etc. So it's how we work in an adult mode. I think in terms of, I'm involved in several university groups who are doing scenario thinking. Has that happened? Has somebody kind of presented potential future scenarios for 2015? Okay, shall I just do a quick summary then? Okay, there's a really interesting paper from the Leadership Foundation. They've got two scenarios on the changing landscape. And what they're saying is one scenario is you get the research-intensive universities that have really consolidated themselves, got national reputation. And then you get the post-2015 universities, whatever that means and what that looks like. Or there's a three-tier system where you get the super six research universities. You then have the grand universities that are kind of more traditional as they are now, but not quite as top league research. And then what they're calling the comprehensive universities that will have incorporated FE, yeah? And you might put vocational in there, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And the University Alliance is doing started a really interesting piece of work about scenario building for the future. So I'm not going to pretend I've got the answers, but I am reading and involved in different aspects of that. So basically, in a way, it's going to always be, I think, a mix of the lists that I've got up there and some of that we've got now, and some of that might change. From my conversations with Willett and discussions that I have with ministers, the sense that I'm getting is, in terms of how they want the HE system to change and respond, and my own thoughts in here, is that really they want a diversity across an integrated system. And the specialisation of mission or its distinctiveness will lie more in the organisational boundaries. And that will be very much up to the university leadership, staff, the locality, the context. So distinctiveness becomes more of an institutional base. In terms of responsiveness, support and adaptability to students, I do think universities and colleges have to go where you've never been. I think colleges are a bit further down the road on that. But to really, really respond, I heard a Bill Gates quote earlier today, nothing seems to change much in 12 months, but mega changes happen over a 10-year period. And I wonder if we're in that phase at the moment, that it seems to be inching along at the moment, but you know what, by 2020, it is going to feel really mega different. And I think that's about how we respond, support and adapt to students who are paying more, whichever way you look at it. I've used the word revolution. I do think there will be some form of revolution, and you've heard me go on about this before, in teaching and learning through social media, technologies, and the use of learning space. If you go into colleges and universities at the moment, they could have been like that in the 18th, 19th century. They haven't changed that much fundamentally. The whole issue of entrepreneurial business models and agility, collaboration, crossing of institutional boundaries, I think that is actually really going to change, and how many mergers you'll have and how many will go under, I don't know. They keep saying colleges will, but not one has yet. We merge, but they've never got rid of a college. We know they're angling very much for a private provider to take over and buy a college, so it'll probably happen sooner rather than later. New forms of accreditation, and will a very different institutional model emerge? That's the question that really interests me. What I'll do quickly, influences on audience that might be less familiar to you. You know your own. I'm not sure how aware you are of, yes, of course, the rising fees, but the loans, the actual onset of 24 plus advanced learning loans, which is just about to happen, will hugely affect the level three students coming in through vocational routes in FE. The impact review is about to be published on that. So really keep an eye out for that, because that a lot of learners who might have gone to university, that might really affect them getting level three, never mind going on to level four and above. The raising of the participation age alongside unemployment and new occupations, there's a whole arena here for learners looking for new and innovative progression and pathways. The whole issue about being the informed consumer, raised expectation, globalisation, technology and social media. I think the mix of those in terms of influencing our audience could be huge. I just thought it might be useful, because that was my topic, new audiences, just to kind of list out what they might be. From the students that we talk to, more flexible study at degree level, yeah, because the hardships that younger people are experiencing. So how does that happen at all ages? But I think younger people are going to want more of that. I think the biggie is the higher apprenticeships, the higher level skills focused routes. We're already seeing young people who are academically bright enough to go to university, who are saying, why would I get that debt when I can go through a vocational route? Now, I think what's going to be really interesting is how FE responds to that and how the universities who are looking to be vocationally orientated and to specialise and to build up their portfolio in the vocational route. I think that's a huge area of growth. And they might not be new audiences in terms of they're the students who would have gone into degrees, but they're looking for something very different in terms of what they want. Distant online learners, we've been saying that since time began, but I think that will actually hot up now in terms of responsiveness to that. Employers needing new skills. I was at the UK Skills Commission this morning. The first employer pilot where employers are actually going to deliver the skills instead of educational institutions are about to be announced, probably a month or so. I think they're going to do it after the recess. That's a whole new strand that's coming in. Employers directly being funded to deliver training. So what will that do in relation to universities and those routes? Older learners, unemployed graduates, widening participation. I think universities will need to take to a whole new level, new sorts of postgraduate studies, reskilling, upskilling. A big one that I'm really interested in is generating entrepreneurs, that whole notion of generating job creators, not just job consumers, because I think it's actually really, really important that we don't keep producing people with skills related for employment that doesn't exist. I think there's a level of immorality in that. So how are we shifting to really generate job creators, and there's a group called the Gazelle Group in FE who are really involved in that, and 157 are involved with that. And I think there's a whole thing about new audiences that we've not even thought of but should be scanning for. Again, I think, how long have I got? Sorry.
6 minutes.
Okay. In terms of how to engage, I think the key is new strategies, innovative research and networks, particularly social media, to understand what future learners expect, want and will pay for. And I think relationships with networks, pressure groups, social media, that fits in the technology, but ways of actually engaging us baby boomers or older, we really don't know how their mind works. My daughters who are in their 20s and early 30s, I've got grandchildren, they think completely differently than I do. Their whole way of engaging with technology. And how are we really getting underneath that and playing with that? Effective marketing, new pedagogies, student support, and inspiring technology in a really big way. So I think where I'll end is, I think the government preoccupation at the moment with numbers, open market and particulars, it kind of matters. But what we need is bigger thinking, a grander vision and some real sense of how it might be. I think that needs to come from the universities and the colleges to generate so that we are co-creating a future that we believe is best for students, for the economy and for social cohesion. My favourite management quote is Drucker, the best way to predict the future is to create it together. And I think there never was a more apposite time for us as institutions to create the future together across an integrated HE system nationally that really, really does put students at the heart of the system and is not just rhetoric. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.